Welcome to another edition of Our World. I'm your host, Daryl Davis. Welcome, everybody. And we are still in February celebrating Black History Month. And with that, I want to begin by, I want to start, before we get into the Black History segment, I'm hearing these rumblings and these rumors about the political situation in Peekskill, New York. And what I'm hearing is disturbing, and I need to say these things so that everyone is clear. I'm talking about the Democratic Party in Peekskill. I'm talking about the Westchester County Democratic Party. I'm talking about the New York State Democratic Party. When I say, I want everybody to be clear, and I want everybody to understand our position. And the rumors that I'm hearing is that former Peekskill Mayor Mary Foster is running around to, I'm going to call them the old guard Democrat, the Democrats that I worked with in Peekskill, the ones that are Democrats, that are progressives, that embrace people of color and embrace working class and poor people. That's the old guard Democrats. And the reason I'm referring to them as old guard is because when Mary Foster came to power, she pushed those folks aside. And there became a non-relationship between her and traditional Democrats in Peekskill. And so that has been the political situation. And this is why we had the almost four-year struggle we've had in Peekskill recently. The struggle for workers' rights, the struggle for tenant rights, and the struggle for civil rights. All in Peekskill the last 4 years, vicious battle, disgusting, unnecessary, never should have happened. The Democratic Party never should have allowed it, and they did. And so what I'm hearing is that Peekskill Mayor, former Mayor Mary Foster, is now running around to the old guard Democrats saying, I was wrong, I was listening to the wrong people, I was listening to the newly arrived residents of Peekskill instead of the hometown folks, and I know better, and so I want to run again in 2 years. Now, this is what I have to say about that. First of all, and there's a reason why I am identifying state Dems, county Dems, and local Dems. First of all, they better not allow this woman to go near a nominating petition. They better not even consider letting her run again. I have said very early on in this struggle that there's something wrong with this woman. She's mentally or emotionally unbalanced. And I said it publicly. I questioned her at council meetings, and this is what we got back. We got back chronic lying. We got back behavior that can only be described as unbalanced. Now, mind you, the mayor of Peekskill is a part-time position. It pays, I think, $15,000 a year now. Peekskill has a strong city manager form of government, which means they pay the city manager, I don't know what they're paying him, $160,000 a year to run a small city. It's his 9-to-5. He's there every day. He is the supervisor of the department heads and the big boss. The mayor and council are part-time. They deal with policy, whether or not to put a stop sign on Fremont Street, and things more important than that, but they deal with policy. This mayor got elected, literally moved into City Hall. She was in her office more than the city manager was. She was there on weekends. She was there late into the night. She interacted directly with staff. Big no-no. Directly with staff. She is the direct supervisor of the city manager. And she called, according to their own words, she called department heads idiots behind closed doors. What is wrong with you? What are you, an idiot? What are you, stupid? This is how she talked to them and abused them. And she had no reason to even interact with them. So this was a woman who had no respect for local government. That's a problem. That's a red flag. She doesn't understand or care about boundaries. And so that was red flag number one. Part-time mayor living in City Hall, acting like a full-time mayor. And by the way, I know full-time mayors. I sit in some of their offices and while they do business. And they follow the chain. I mean, they have the authority to give direct orders, but they follow the chain. They call their department heads or their chief of staff. But not this woman. She'll walk right down to, you know, a maintenance worker and tell him to go mop the floor somewhere. You know, so that was issue number one with her. Red flag, which I repeatedly said at these council meetings, excuse me, there's a total breakdown in local government here. You have a part-time mayor running the city full-time, and she's not qualified. There's a reason they ask you to have master's degrees in public administration, et cetera, urban planning. She doesn't have any of that. And the city council, whose role is supposed to be checks and balances, so that if you have a mayor who gets a little power hungry, the council checks them, keeps them in line. This all Democratic Party council did not do that, and we depended on them to do that. We thought that once we went public, we already knew Mary Foster was not going to help us. Despite the fact that we supported her when she ran, we worked on her campaign to get her reelected, endorsed her on this radio show, hosted meetings for her with housing authority residents when she was running for reelection. When she was running for mayor the first time. When she got elected, I had a Martin Luther King function shortly after she was sworn in. I invited her to be my keynote speaker. You know, so when these issues came up and we went to her behind closed doors, she thumbed her nose at us. And so I knew it was going to be a fight, an unnecessary fight. And so I told my supporters, hey, in 2 or 3 months of a public battle, the council will override her, and they'll address these issues. And by the way, tell me why you would have to fight for women to not be sexually harassed. Why would you have to fight the mayor and council to take action to stop a man who these women were saying were sexually harassing them? Why was that a fight? Why did we have to fight for them to address white managers calling black employees nigger? Why did that become a fight? All right, and so we had these issues. And so instead of addressing them, and we gave them the opportunity to discuss these things behind closed doors and address them, the mayor dug in and said, nope, my way or the highway. And then it was a fight. And it wasn't even a political fight. It was a fight, as Pete Seeger said, almost against fascism. See, when you start banning people from public meetings illegally, and when there's no crimes being committed or you're not arrested and you're banned for 2 years from public meetings like you're in apartheid South Africa, and not one council member objects to that, and when you have police assigned to you at council meetings as they did to me, that's not fascism. I'm not breaking any laws. I'm standing on the Constitution. I'm there petitioning my government. And to be intimidated and harassed and taken into police custody only to be released outside the council meeting and to have cops stand on the stairs and say, you can't come back in the building, even though I wasn't charged with a crime? And not one council member spoke up for our rights? And you want to tell me that this woman learned her lesson and that she wants to come back? Now, here's the bigger issue. Her supporters, she and her supporters, ran the most racist political campaigns in the history of Peekskill. Not Republicans, not conservatives, not Tea Party, but Democrats, putting out a press release 2 years ago that Darryl Davis, the angry, dangerous black man, is helping the Republicans get signatures on petitions, put that in the newspaper like it was true. And so the first question is, what if it was true that I was helping them, that I got signatures on petitions, which I didn't? But they pulled the Willie Horton card that we have to save the town from the welfare queens and the people with the handouts and the dangerous black man. And I wrote an article addressing all of that, appeared in the Peekskill Daily Voice. And I said, I have not carried petitions for the Republicans. I did not get signatures. They know this to be a lie, but they're preying on racial fear. Disgusting. And then as we continue to pick up momentum and the movement grew, they passed more oppressive laws against us. No clapping at council meetings. An affront to the Constitution, by the way. Made world news. And police occupying City Hall, upstairs, downstairs, following Darryl Davis to the bathroom. Everything they could do to stifle free speech instead of getting rid of a housing director accused of sexual harassment and accused of sexual discrimination under oath by a complainant. Sworn testimony that I have in my possession. And things even worse than that, which I haven't shared publicly yet. And so with all of that went on, and the Peekskill patch, their home base, to drum up racist support. Go there and read the comments about me. Go there and see how they call me a monkey. You know, and that I'm representing welfare queens and people with handouts. And here's the deal. At the end of the day, while all of this was going on, I was writing to the Westchester County Democratic Party. I said, you need to intervene. These people are not Democrats. They do not support the same platform you support. I wrote to the state Dems. And even the national Dems. I sent video. I sent newspaper articles. I sent emails. I sent documents showing that this woman was hell-bent on gentrifying Peekskill, closing down public housing. And if we got in the way, we would be arrested. We would be banned. We would be called niggers publicly. And that's what happened. And so for me to even get a whiff of her talking about she was wrong, she learned her lesson, you know, for her to even consider that. And here's my bottom line. I'm still waiting. And this is where Noam Bramson got caught up when he ran for county executive against Rob Astorino in Westchester. His campaign, I met with Noam one-on-one, and I told him, I said, I think you can win. And if you get the nomination, I'll work hard for you. I said, there's one issue, though. You have a mayor in Peekskill who's not a Democrat, but is Tea Party. We cannot coexist. If this woman seeks reelection, I can't help you. If you Democrats allow her to be at the top of that ticket, then you become my enemy. Because then you're saying it's okay to call black people niggers and ban people illegally like there's not a constitution and call your most loyal voting base welfare queens. And I was promised and assured that she would not be running again. I heard it from the county Dems, the local Dems, and then they turn around and they allowed her to run again. And then, so with Bramson, when his campaign reached out to me and said, yeah, you know, we're off and running. We want to get you involved in the campaign. I said, hold up. I'm not working for him. Why not, Mr. Davis? Well, because when I met with Noam, I told him that if this woman was running, there's an issue. We can't coexist. Democracy and fascism can't coexist. He said, well, you know, no, that's Noam didn't create that problem. I said, okay, fair enough. But all Noam has to do, all he has to do is publicly say there's no place in the Democratic Party for calling black people niggers and public housing recipients welfare queens. That's all he has to do. If he makes a statement saying that these are not Democratic Party principles, I'll support him. He wouldn't do it. And in fact, not one Democrat did it. They all sat on the sidelines thinking that this woman would crush our movement and get reelected, and it would be business as usual. But we beat her. And the Republicans did not win. Frank Catalina did not win this election. We whittled the Democrats down low enough for the Republicans to jump over the hump. That was our strategy. That was why we risk arrest, standing up to them, showing them that they're showing the voters that they are liars, that they're bullies, that they have no respect for the Constitution. And the people saw it, and the Democrats stayed home. Many stayed home, many crossed over. And that's how they won. It was our strategy that won the day, not the Republican Party. Now, that said, so I hear this rumor that she's trying to get support and run again. I say again, Westchester Dems and state Dems, don't come running to me like you did 4 years ago. State Dems, and say, Darryl, even someone from Governor Patterson's office came down to Albany to talk to me. We want you to make the peace with the Peekskill Dems, and we want you to give a speech at a unity rally. And we want you to tell black people they need to vote Democrat, otherwise Greg Ball is going to win as state senator, and Nan Haywood is going to win as congresswoman. And I said, you wasted your gas, you know, coming down here to ask me to do that. I wrote to you over a year ago telling you what these people were doing in City Hall, and you ignored me. Now that you see all roads lead through Peekskill, you're gonna ask me to make peace with these people? It's not happening. And Greg Ball did win, and Nan Haywood did win. And so we have the power. We have the power. And we proved it in Peekskill, and we will prove it again in 2 years. And so whoever is running for county executive in Westchester County in 4 years, and whoever is running for whatever offices in 2 years, if this woman, there's two conditions. One, she better not be nowhere near any kind of ticket running for dog catcher, or we will be protesting, boycotting, and everything else we need to do. And two, I am still demanding an apology, official apology or statement from the Democratic Party. We do not condone calling black people niggers. We do not. There is no place in the Democratic Party for calling public housing residents welfare queens. That's all they have to do. And then we could talk about patching things up. But before then, there's nothing to talk about. Mary Foster better not be near a nominated petition. Disgraceful. And, you know, I mean, you may want to say, well, Darryl, it's only a rumor. You're getting kind of worked up. Well, check, you know, I would like to believe it's only a rumor, except that she has been involved behind the scenes right from the start. Right from the start, when she lost election night. Catalina won. It was clear there was a new mayor. But the Democratic Party sent a clear signal, because the council seats, it was too close to call. We had to wait like a month to find out who really won the council seats. But she lost election night, so the voters said, whoever's going to control the council, whatever, but that woman is out. It was a clear signal. And so, because the Democrats held on to a majority, a 4-3 majority, mayor and council, Democratic Party had a meeting and said, hey, it's time to turn the page. We have a new mayor. Let's work with them. Drew Claxton, who's still on the city council, and Mary Foster and Mary Beth McGowan, who also got defeated, said, no, we got the majority. We're still running things our way. In other words, we don't care what the voters said. We don't care about the will of the people. You don't find that disturbing? And that's what happened. And that's what's been going on. And so that was what she did from the beginning. And it's sick, because she spent about $35,000 of her own money to try to get reelected, because people who donated to her 2 years ago started donating to Frank Catalina. Her support dried up financially, and so she used her money to try to buy a seat that pays $15,000 a year. And so she has not gone away. She's showing up to all of these meetings. And that, I'm sorry, that's an unbalanced person. This is only a part-time mayor's seat. and you lost, and you lost resoundingly. Maybe the numbers were a little bit close, but when you got a 2.5 to 1 voter registration advantage and you get defeated, that's a tremendous statement. That is a resounding defeat. And your other council members win, but you lose? Go home. It's over. And so I take this rumor seriously. Sending out a little fair warning. If you go there, there's going to be a big problem. I would like to avoid it, like we tried 4 years ago. However, we're not going to let them put somebody back in office who made it clear that she's hostile to poor people and people of color, and the Constitution just won't sit for it. All right, folks, we're going to be going to a short break. You're listening to Our World on Hudson Valley Talk Radio. Back, folks. You're listening to Our World. I'm your host, Daryl Davis, and I had to address this whole notion of Mary Foster, former Peekskill mayor, still lurking around, still trying to run City Hall. Even talk of her making amends with the old guard Democrats. I was wrong. I made a mistake. I was listening to the wrong people. When I said it at City Hall, you know, they didn't answer me. They let the clock run out, and the cops came and dragged me away. I said that these newly arrived people are snobs. They just moved into Peekskill, and they're deciding that public housing residents are not good enough to remain in their own hometown, but you newly arrived people are have more rights. That's colonialism, by the way. That's imperialism, to move in and take over and push other people out and marginalize them. And so this is what has been happening under Mary Foster. But now she says she was wrong to listen to these folks. And I don't believe it for a second. You know, this woman has a burning hatred for people of color and poor people. She has no respect at all for us. And she showed it. And the Democratic Party allowed her to do it, and we beat them. And so it's more than a rumor. She's still lurking around through Drew Claxton. She's still trying to run the Peekskill city government. And we'll see what happens. But the Westchester County Democrats and State Dems, we're not done. I will be in touch with them again and ask them if they will meet with us and make a statement toward a step towards healing and patching things up. If not, makes no difference to me. You know, and this leads me to another issue. You know, people have been saying, even before Catalina won, because we had to deal with this whole notion. And again, this is part of the Democrats' arrogance. Oh, they have to vote for us. They're not going to vote Republican. They have to vote for us because the other side is worse. So we can keep abusing them and kicking them in their butts and ignoring them and treating them like trash because there's no way they're going to vote Republican. Well, that may be true in other communities and among other people, but it ain't true with us. Committee for Justice. See, because the Committee for Justice, which I founded and I head up, before we get involved in struggle, this is important to understand. You know, when you go into a conflict, King was involved in conflicts, Gandhi, Malcolm, Tubman, whoever. When you're involved in George Washington, when you're involved in conflict, there's something you need to know before you go into a conflict. And I know many people have read, you know, philosophical writings, Zen and what have you, where, you know, they kind of allude to the fact that a battle is won or lost before you even engage in the conflict. And Committee for Justice understands that. And most people don't, especially politicians. A battle, a conflict is won or lost even before there's any interaction. And so with that said, in the Committee for Justice, the first thing you learn is self-respect and dignity. And what does that do for you? And why do we do it and how do we do it? Well, first of all, we peel back the teachings of this society that black people are inferior and that we're second-class citizens and that we contributed nothing to world progress except our slave labor to build America. And so we start by sharing the real history of African people, pyramid builders, philosophy writers, taught the Greeks philosophy. How do I know that? Because Herodotus wrote about it, a Greek. Was practicing medicine thousands of years ago. Had high culture, cities, universities, something called an Assyrica, a university in northern Africa that Greeks traveled to learn, according to their own words, philosophy and medicine. And so we learn about that. And then our self-worth goes up. And then we understand that, well, if it's in our DNA. I mean, then we can do great things again. And then we also deal with self-respect and integrity. We don't allow people, once you have self-love and self-worth, you don't let people spit in your face anymore. And so this is who you're taking the battlefield against. You're not taking a battlefield now against the docile Negro who you created, the turn the other cheek, I'm just going to keep my mouth shut to get along so you can tell your black jokes around me. You can say demeaning stuff to me all the time, even in front of my kids, and I'll just laugh it off because I like my job. I likes my job, boss. You're not dealing with that kind of person of color. And so that gives us a distinct advantage because nobody fights harder than somebody whose dignity is injured. And that's what happens when you stand up for your rights and you're called the N-word and they retaliate against your children, which this mayor did, and so on and so on. And so then we know who we are, is what I'm saying. And we know that nobody is better than us. And we have a core understanding that we deserve the best that the world has to offer and nothing less. And we won't accept anything less. And so when you have that foundation, you will fight for your rights, just like every other group has done in history. And I know it's hard for a lot of people to understand that black people have a right to do the same, that we have a right to stand up and put an end to the George Zimmermans and black kid end up dead because he had loud music playing and Dunn didn't like it. What does that say? You know, there's no reason to turn the other cheek in that kind of situation. You have to stand up and raise hell and demand justice. And if you don't get it, you vote out the district attorney. You vote out the governor. You boycott. You stop giving your money to these people who donate campaign contributions to these governors and district attorneys. There's a lot you can do. You know, and so we bring all of that to the battlefield. Now, you know, some people aren't comfortable with that analogy, oh, a battlefield. No. It's accurate. You know why it's accurate? Because we're going up against guns. See, when Mayor Foster tells a lie and we try to correct her, she says we're out of order. And then the guns come, the cops come with their guns, and they grab me or surround me and escort me out the room. If there's guns on the other side of the table, you can't call that a spelling bee. You know, and so these are hardcore, ugly issues, but that's what gaining and preserving democracy is. It's not clean cut. It's not a walk in the park. You know, so the Committee for Justice, that's what we bring to the table before there's even a conflict. We bring courage and dignity and self-respect. And we also know that you can beat City Hall. See, that's the other thing, the myth. You know, you can't beat City Hall. Well, yeah, you can. We've done it before. We did it before Mary Foster. So we knew coming in we could beat her. And the other thing that we understand is that struggle does not go according to weather or calendar. What do I mean by that? there are people in the so-called movement that will put up a fight for 3 months, and if they don't win it, well, let's move on. There's other things to do. Now, there's no calendar for justice. This was a king. The Montgomery bus boycott lasted a few years. You know, history would have you believe that, you know, they boycotted for a few months and they won. No. That lasted for at least a few years, and then only ended because the Supreme Court came in and said segregation is unconstitutional. So it could have went on for 5 years or 10 years. And we have to get it out of our mind that there's a timetable for justice. As long as you know you're going to win, you keep fighting. And that was what we had, because people inside City Hall said to me, wow, the mayor and council were shocked at your staying power. We thought that you'd be gone in 3 months, and then it went on to 6 months, and they said, they'll give up after a year. And we didn't give up. And after the mayor got reelected 2 years into the struggle, they said, we broke their backs. And when she came into City Hall to be, you know, to be recognized as being reelected, we were sitting right there grinning at her. Little did she know, yeah, you won the election, but we're closing in on you. We cut into your support. In 2 more years, we will have cut in deeper, and you will be an ex-mayor. We knew that, and so we stayed in the game. And you have to, you know, where does this come from? Why do I say these things? Where does this come from? Well, you know, if you're serious about helping people, you know, and again, the people that we help, Committee for Justice, in general, are poor people. In general, we have helped middle class, upper middle class, you know, every race and ethnicity, every single one, black, white, Asian, Latino, you know, everyone, Irish, Italian, everyone over the years. And so when you're helping people, but our issues remain pretty much the same. Police brutality, police abuse, excessive force, job discrimination, sexual harassment, eviction prevention. And so when you're dealing with these type of issues where if you lose, somebody gets evicted, or somebody goes to prison unjustly, you have to be dedicated. You have to study. You have to read. You have to hone your skills, your organizing skills. You know, and very few people will do that. You know, and so when we go up against someone like Mary Foster, who to me, and I don't say this with any arrogance, I say this because it needs to be said, she's a backwoods hillbilly to me. I've been doing this for 35 years. And my reputation as an organizer is known throughout the state. Otherwise, why would Jesse Jackson contact me in the 80s and say, can you run my campaign in that area? Why would Al Sharpton ask me to organize a 2-week, 170-mile march, walk? Why would Andrew Cuomo ask me to be a part of his startup team for West Help Greenberg? Why would Governor David Patterson ask me to take a job with him when he was a state senator? Why would George Pataki ask me to take a job with him when he was governor? It certainly ain't for my sweet personality, although I have that too. It's organizing, which I certainly bring certain, I'm aware that I bring certain abilities and gifts to the table, but I've also worked hard and studied and learned and take people's advice, and I'm not afraid to pick up the phone and call somebody and say, hey, what do you think about this? You know, and so I've done this all over the state my whole life, since I was a teenager. Mary Foster's been on the scene for 6 years, and because of her arrogance, she thought she was better than me and smarter than me, and, you know, and even when I asked her for a meeting, before this thing turned into the big fight that it did, she responded, well, first you have to meet with the city manager, and then we'll decide if it's worth my time. That's an email I got from her. Not those exact words, okay? But that's what the email said. Meet with the city manager first, and then we'll see if it's worthy of my time, basically. Well, guess what? I've called state senators, governors, county executives, whatever. Call them on their cell, mayors of bigger cities, directly and they put it on the calendar, we wouldn't meet. I said, okay, fine, I'll do that. You know, because it's not an ego thing with me. If you say I got to sit, it's her ego. You know, if you say I got to meet with the city manager first because, you know, you're not on my level, I'll meet with the city manager, and then I'll meet with you. If that's how you want it, that's how you want it. But that's your issue, Mary Foster. That's your arrogance. That's your ego, to think that you're better than me. And that's why you're ex-mayor Mary Foster now. You know, so you have to, you bring these things to the conflict, experience, hard work. When I say hard work, I mean studying, learning, analyzing history, analyzing movements, analyzing leadership strategies and tactics and methodology and historiography. And, you know, you have, that's what I studied. It works for me. What has she studied? You know, and so these conflicts are, it's always best avoidable, and we always offer that first, every single time. But with this woman, there was just no getting around it. She wanted a conflict. She wanted to put these colored people in their places. And she said it. She said it not at council meetings. I mean, although she did say it a couple of times at council meetings. But she said it, you know, to her husband, who has a big mouth and blabs his mouth all over town, that Mary's going to put Daryl in his place and stand up to him and put him in his place. What is my place? What is my place? Docile Negro watching women in my community be sexually harassed? Is that my place? Castrated? Is that your vision of what a black man should look like? Docile, silent, why my women and children are being attacked? Didn't my girlfriend get smacked at a council meeting and was not arrested until the New York State Attorney General's office stepped in and called the chief and said, what's going on here? This video's all over the internet. Because Mary Foster said no crime was committed. A white woman can smack a black woman unprovoked. It's not a crime in Peekskill. This is the ugliest administration has ever been. And the Dems can learn from it and move on, or they don't have to learn from it, and then in 2 years there'll be some ex-council members hanging out with Mary Foster. Now, you know, I want to talk about this. You know, I kind of alluded to the violence against people of color. You know, and I want to talk a little bit about the latest case where this kid Davis was murdered because of an argument. This guy Dunn doesn't like loud music, and it ended up with the death of a young man of color. And before I get into that, there's some things I want to say right up front. White kids play loud music too. They do it more than black kids do. They do it in more communities. They also skateboard down the middle of the street and nothing is said. They also have their pants hanging off their butts and their baseball caps on backwards and nothing is said. So it's not about the loud music. It is about intolerance. It is about white intolerance. Now, I was in New Rochelle a couple months ago. Don't remember why, but I had a meeting or something, and I was there. I was early, so I went to a McDonald's in New Rochelle, and for coffee. You know, because I don't eat horse meat. But anyway, so I'm in McDonald's drinking coffee, and when I went to sit down, I glanced. I saw there were a few young kids sitting at a table diagonal from me. One of them looked Asian, and one looked Latino. One was African American. I don't know for sure, but that you know, I glanced over. Sat down, and then I was going through some emails on my phone, and all of a sudden I hear rap music, and it's these three kids, and they couldn't have been, not one of them was over 15, they were maybe 14, 13, maybe 15, but in any case, so I found myself, my head bobbing to the beat, they sounded great, and I was enjoying it. And it, you know, and then I, you know, I'm just going to call it the way it happened. White lady came over there where we were with a tray of food, and she I saw her look at them, and then she looked at me, and I smiled because I thought it was great. They're not out robbing anybody. They're not selling drugs. They're into their music. And she gave me a dirty look because I smiled about it, you know. And she went and put her tray down, and she went back up to the front, and she came back, and then the manager came. I'm going to ask you guys to have to go outside if you're going to continue to make the music, or, you know, if you don't tone it down or something. Now, it was no big deal on the surface, but it reflected something. And I don't care who don't want to hear this. White intolerance. Those kids were not bothering anybody. It, and, you know, why did you have to take action is my point. Why couldn't you just go sit somewhere else? It's a big McDonald's. Why couldn't you just go sit somewhere else? Why? Because these were minorities and you feel you have a right to, you know, impose on their fun? Maybe you don't like seeing them smiling or having fun. I don't know what it is. But I don't like loud music in certain places, certain times, but I tolerate it. I don't think a kid should die because I don't want to hear loud music. You know, I don't like the kids with their pants hanging off their butts, but I'm not going to hold it against them no more than I hold it against Justin Bieber. That's a parental issue. That's a school issue. You know, I see kids going to school with their pants hanging off their butts. The school should deal with that. See, because the kids have to be learned a professional demeanor for when they go on job interviews or when they're conducting business, you know. But it's this lack of tolerance for things different than you, white America, that is causing these deaths, that contributes to these deaths. Now, somebody made a comment about the Dunn case. I believe it was an actor. I didn't really see the article. Somebody posted it on Facebook with the video. But the title was, he said that this is not a black problem. The killings of young Davis and, you know, what Zimmerman did and all that. He said it's not a black problem. This is a white problem. And think about that for a minute, because there's another issue on the table that no one wants to talk about, and that is the American consciousness, the American psyche at any given moment. And that's important. So when this actor says this is not a black issue, he's right. And case in point, look at O.J. Simpson. Now, when I say that word, it's just a foregone conclusion in your mind that he killed these people and he's getting everything he deserved. That's white consciousness. And the reason I say that is because you made him pay for it even though a jury said not guilty. You still made him pay for it. Whether you think he did it or you think he didn't do it, you made him pay for it. And so when George Zimmerman does what he does, and when police officers shoot an unarmed black person 35 times, or when police officers take their nightsticks and shove it up Diallo's anatomy, and you let him get away with it, and Rodney King gets beaten to a pulp on national television, and you let them get away with it, that's white consciousness, tolerating it. It's okay. And that's why it is a white problem. It's not a black problem. It's a white problem. Because you claim to be in a democracy. You claim to be the leaders of the free world. And you allow these people to do these things. Okay, so they got away with it in court. But why aren't they shunned? You know, why aren't they hounded? Why aren't they harassed? To send a signal to the next one. We won't tolerate it. See, when Bernhard Goetz shot those kids on the subway, if America would have hounded him the way they did O.J. Simpson, we wouldn't have to worry about those issues. when these cops do the things they do, we wouldn't have to worry about them. But they don't. They don't. You know, I just read Ben Affleck, who I'm a fan of. By the way, you know him from his movies, but he's very involved politically. I've seen him on talk shows, very intelligent, well-spoken. I just saw where he's going to testify before Congress about the killings in the Congo. Hey, Ben, I got news for you. Why don't you testify about the killings in America? Yeah, well, Trayvon Martin and now this young kid Davis and others. Why don't you shine some light on those issues? It is a white problem because black life seems to be valueless in the American consciousness. Now, what do I mean by that? Because some people are offended, saying, "No, I don't agree with that. I think black life is precious." Then where's your letters to the editor? Where's your phone calls being outraged to the DA demanding a prosecution? Where are you when these folks march? Why are these marches, these protests, all black? It's not good enough to say, "I agree with you. It is wrong." But yet, you will be out front of a store that's selling fur. You'll boycott a store that sells fur because it's mistreatment of animals or it's killing animals. You'll show up at a big demonstration to save the whales, but when black people are being shot down unjustly, you don't show up. That's an American consciousness. That is a collective consciousness, a collective attitude, which America has in every given time. Why else do you explain during some moments in history selling liquor is illegal, but at another time it's legal? How else can you explain snuff, being legal, which was cocaine, and then becoming illegal? How else can you explain, at any given time, fantasy and science fiction movies dominate, and in other times it's dramas? There is a collective consciousness. Why is it that sometimes there's war, and then before you know it, that president is voted out? There's a collective consciousness, and right now the American collective consciousness does not care about deaths of black people. A harsh thing to say. But guess what? If it wasn't true, these deaths would stop. Because the judges wouldn't have it. The juries wouldn't have it. The community wouldn't have it. The news media wouldn't have it. But they're tolerating it. They're not putting any value on our lives. And we need to start saying that. Where are you, white America, when these kids are being shot for loud music or for having Skittles and Arizona tea on them? Where are you? Where's your outrage? Do you only have enough to save the pigeons and the whales and the eagles? Is that all the compassion you have? Or for black people not in this country, in the Congo, in South Africa, In West Africa, you don't have any to give your fellow citizens? There's the question on the table. Come back to me and say, "Darryl, you're wrong, and here's why." I welcome this conversation. Hey, folks, we're going to be taking a short break, and when we come back, I'm going to close out today's episode of Our World on Hudson Valley Talk Radio. Back, folks. You're listening to Our World. I'm your host, Darryl Davis, and as I say, today is February is Black History Month, and I honest to God, it feels like this society is sliding backwards. And the reason I say that is because I remember everybody celebrating Black History. All the schools, there were special programs. There were programs in the evening. All the networks ran special movies and You would see PSAs, ABC recognizes Black History Month. And there's still a little bit of that, but it is certainly going downhill. And, you know, but, you know, it is what it is. But more importantly, and I, you know, I'm going to do my part. I'm going to tell our story because at the end of the day, we are responsible. In fact, it's our obligation because who's going to tell our story better than us? It's all a matter of experience, culture, and perspective. You know, the truth is I don't want them telling our story because then they say that, you know, we were in the jungle, naked, eating each other until the European Christian came and civilized us and brought us back to America to live in their homes and do their work. I don't want them telling that story because, first of all, it's a lie. It's a very sanitized version of what happened, you know. And again, and then it's like, you know, there was no culture there. You know, they were just jungle. I don't want them telling our story because the reality is that before America was born, founded, or even thought of, African civilizations had spanned 2,000 years. You know, people look at Egypt, and even there, it's like, well, it's in the Middle East, it's not in Africa. Well, every map I've ever seen, Egypt is firmly on the African continent. And, you know, but when they, you know, they'll take people from history who were black and make them white. So there was this. These are not accidents. This was a concerted effort to justify the slavery, to say black people had no history or culture, you know, so slavery was good for them. Okay, well, slavery's gone. Now it's time to tell the truth, you know, and they're not willing to do it. We need to do it because our kids need role models. You know, they need to see success in their color and in their eyes. It's important, role models, for inspiration, for self-knowledge that, hey, I can do this because if my ancestors did it, I can do it. You know, there's no reason to hide the fact that Hannibal was black. You look at him on in the movies, I think, you know, some white actor played him, Cleopatra, black, played by Elizabeth Taylor. We all heard of Aesop's Fables. Aesop, an African slave. Today we know him by the Greek name Aesop. Alexander Dumas, we know the Three Musketeers. Who hasn't at least seen that movie? The Man in the Iron Mask, the Count of Monte Cristo. Alexander Dumas, black man. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Louis Latimer, inventor. And yet, they don't tell that story. Our kids need these role models more than we need athletes and rappers. And nothing against them, but I don't see, you know, I don't see anybody calling Justin Bieber a role model for white people, right? It's a double standard. It's our obligation to put an end to that, you know. And so, again, the challenge. And by the way, I work with a lot of white anti-racist activists in Westchester and other areas. And I'm certainly appreciative that they take on the issue of racism, but I also challenge them to study some black history. Because at the end of the day, we can be in the same room, and they'll admit it. They still have their own racial hang-ups born from, you know, a distorted view of who black people are and our history and culture. And even they need to read black history books and, you know, look at us differently. And so, again, these are the challenges. I mean, it's 2014. You should not be dying because you had loud music on, you know, or because some psycho named George Zimmerman. You know, it's very interesting. You know, honest to God, I am so against the prison system. I am against it on so many levels. But until I looked at Bernhard Goetz and George Zimmerman, then I understood why we have jails. Certain people really need to be locked away. Even though they let Zimmerman get away with what he did, I think it's pretty obvious to everybody that this guy should not be walking around free. He's sick and he's dangerous. And you know, and so I guess there really is a place. You know, I guess prison does have a purpose. Unfortunately, it's being abused and not serving the needs of society in a healthy way. In any case, folks, you can catch this program on DarrellDavisRadio.com if you miss it. And even if you didn't, go there, copy and paste the link, and send it around to your friends, family. Ask them to tune in and listen. It's just DarrellDavisRadio.com. I see a lot of you are listening and going to my website, and it's, you know, it's just an honor to see people from all over the country and other parts of the world tuning in. I thank you. With that, we're out of time. You've been listening to Our World on Hudson Valley Talk Radio.